It's time to fire it up.
Why you gotta make me feel inferior? Because I'm on the grill, B.
From the chop.
Food for action.
To the gear.
It's 122,000 BTUs of char broiling power.
To the drinks.
Drink some beers.
These guys have you covered.
We're just kicking back out here. Just having a barbecue.
This is the Grilling Guy.
Good morning and welcome. You're listening to the Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Appreciate you tuning in. It's the weekend. Supposed to be moderately springy out. Not too warm, not too cold. Great time to get out in your backyard, fire up a smoker, make a little grill envy in your neighborhood. I'm Jop. He's Barbecue Bob. What's cooking?
Hey, buddy. Good to see you, and welcome to the show, the Smokies Show on the airwaves, produced by Mr. Conrad, the legendary...
Yo.
Country star.
You're
right. Yes.
So we're going to talk budget meals on the barbie today, because everybody's noticing that everything is crazy priced now, and it just seems like you got to stretch your dollar somehow. So I thought we'd try and come up with some ideas to make that grilling experience still good, but do it so that daddy can bring home the bacon.
Yeah, and bacon might not be on the menu because that stuff's like, you know, $5.99 to $8.99 a pound, depending on where you buy it.
And, yeah, and I've paid up to 10.
Yeah, I know. You were talking about that, and but that was premium bacon. But you know, there's always going to be a premium price on great stuff. But at the end of the day, you are correct. And what'd you cook this week? Anything good?
You know, had a bunch of kids over, and... we did a bunch of burgers on the grill, which I love.
Right.
I mean, I, of course, love steak, but I think one of my favorite things to grill is just a fine piece of ground beef.
Oh, yeah.
Or in this case, like 15 of them.
Yeah. So what do you like? Do you season them? Do you mix the seasoning in the meat or do you put it on top?
No, I'm a minimalist when it comes to good beef. And when it comes to ground meat, I think it's great to be a minimalist because... you don't want to overwork that meat too much. So I literally, I have 1.5 pound packages, and I'll thaw a pack, and then I'll slice it into 4 pieces, and then I'll do a smash burger on a...
Well, those are big ones, then.
I bring
those
the butcher board
out. 5 ounce burgers.
Well, then I do thin slices for the kids, and I make little sliders for them.
For the grandkids.
Yeah.
Yep. But so when you say you don't like to work it, explain that.
Well, it's just like bread dough. You know, if you move it around too much and work it too hard, you kind of toughen the crust up. Well, beef, ground meat in particular, venison is another one that ground venison you've got to be very careful with. And if you're going to mix it at all with ground venison, you should have a good EVO that you put in with it.
Yep, venison's so lean. You want a little bit of a fat in there.
Yeah,
yeah. But if you mix it, if you overmix it, it gets tough. Right.
Yeah, we have this one family member who will remain unnamed, and when this when this person comes
put
over,
the bus out there,
they have this quote unquote famous hamburger recipe.
Yeah,
and
well, now they know who they are.
Yeah,
and then it's an overworked burger.
They're out of town. They don't listen.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it doesn't matter anyway.
And it's, you know, it's basically it's onion soup mix. Come on, give me a break, would you? Lipton can do things, but not in my house.
Right. Not in a burger.
No.
So, no, I'm a big just cracked pepper and a little bit of sea salt.
Yeah.
And just not even too terribly liberal. But just enough, because I want the beef forward and a little bit of seasoning on your tongue when you take a bite. But, you know, my burgers, they got so much stuff on them when they hit my palate anyway. I'm a big topping guy when it comes to burgers. But I did salmon this week, and it was something that Lisa found somewhere. I don't even know where she got it.
Roadkill salmon?
Yeah, it wasn't. It was pretty fresh. But it had the skin on still, right, fillets. And I... put the skin side up, covered it with EVO, and it didn't need to, but that's what I had, was some Old World Olive Company. And the flavor wasn't going to be on the skin side, but it was just to make it not stick.
Right.
Right? And I had the grill on really hot, the tech. I heated it right up to begin with so I could sear it and make that skin not stick. Right? And then I cooled it way down and shut the lid and let it go. And I took a mixture of... coarse mustard, stone ground mustard, maple syrup, and a little lemon juice. And you mix that up in a bowl, and I glaze the meat side of that salmon with that, shut the lid on low heat, let it go maybe 12, 15 minutes till it's done. You can tell it flakes, right? And but, oh, man, was that good. But the salmon, she found, I think it was close to date, you know what I mean, that they couldn't sell it anymore
strong,
because
huh?
it was a – no, it wasn't strong at all. It was perfectly fine. It was within date, but it was buy one, get one free kind of thing. And she – so we had like 2 pounds of it, and it was 4 fillets, and it turned out good. But that little simple half-ground mustard, half-maple syrup with a little lemon juice in there, and I just put that on as a glaze and let it cook
so
down.
So you didn't brine it at all?
I did not. I did not. Took it right out of the package, rinsed it, and then put that – oil on one side and the topping on the other and let her go. And but that, when you said cheap meal, it made me think of that because it was a buy one, get one. They were trying to unload it, get it out of the store wherever she was.
Well, and there's a couple chain grocery stores that are very big named, and their food is super cheap. And I've been reading online posts about showing where their product comes from, largely China.
Yeah.
And almost all their breads and any of their mixed stuff are GMO. So, you know, you can get cheap stuff, but you got to read the label and you got to know where this stuff's coming from.
Right.
Because
and what you're putting in your body.
Some countries aren't so safe. I spent the rest of this week, my off time, and even before work in the morning, planting my garden.
Planting or planting?
Planting. Finishing it off. I'm tutored by this wonderful neighbor I have who... is like the only house.
This guy must be impressive. You talked about him for like three or 4 weeks now.
You know, because I want to be a better gardener, and he's a Michigan State grad from
horticulture school.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
And you should see his garden.
Yeah.
It's like walking into Fruit Basket Flower Land. It's just magnificent. He gave me tomato plants, all kinds of heirloom tomatoes and stuff, and he saves his seeds.
Okay.
And that's how you do it with heirloom products.
Okay, so you're the neighbor that guy doesn't want because I'm like, hey man, can you help me?
Oh
out?
No,
hey,
man. No, because every time I do a brisket, I walk a chunk over.
Oh yeah, okay, so it's all about the barter.
I get it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, sure.
You don't want to be a mooch,
right?
But anyway, it's like the first garden I've ever planted that actually is spaced out. The right plants are with the right plants because I learned that you. Some plants help each other,
right?
And some hurt the others.
Right. Yep.
So I'm excited about, and he said to remember to you know that what you do in May is you're gonna have to maintain in August. So I try to keep them all tight together and make little walkways so I can do my weeding.
So how's your soil out there? Because you got a little bit of a sandy hill.
You know that garden plot I have been building up for years, so it's really nice.
Yeah.
And I put manure and all kinds of things on it. I'm composting, and I think he says it looks beautiful.
Good, so good. Well,
I don't necessarily.
The proof will be, if you're still listening, sometime in, maybe July, August, September, we'll be talking about Bob's harvest.
Yeah. I'll have tomatoes in July.
Bring them on in.
Bring them on in, you know. I made a hibachi stir fry, and I put zucchini in it for the first time. Damn if it wasn't good.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, and I just seasoned it with some of that Badia seasonal before I put it on the grill, and I cut them in planks, if you will, down the lengthways of those, and then grilled them up, again, hot, so they crisp up a little bit with a little oil on there, and then I chopped them up crossways, pretty small.
After you grilled them.
Right, and mixed them in with rice. Holy cow, was that good. Made a great flavor. So, but that was cheap. I mean, zucchinis were like 35 cents a piece, and it was a vegetable for the family.
Yeah, right? I did plant some of those as well, and... it's almost time for asparagus.
Yeah.
And this year, I'm going to can a bunch of it because I didn't last year, and I really missed it.
So
I love canned asparagus.
It's not almost. It's there.
Right.
It's here.
Yeah. I was going to say, you got to get up.
Yeah.
You got to get up north on the northwest side of Michigan up there in that Hart area.
Right.
Up in there. That stuff's everywhere up there around the roadsides. So
that's
cool.
Good
I love
to hear.
It, too. I don't like what it does to me, but I really like the taste of it.
It's very good for you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, parts of it, you can tell. If anything that smells like that, it's got to be good for you.
It's coming out of your body.
You're right, yeah. But anyway, coming up next, we're gonna continue down the budget road because ground meat is where it's at. But we want to make sure that we cover a few recipes and we don't let your meat loaf. You're listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Jim, founder of Schmoe's Brewing Company. We're a small, family-owned brewery that serves the Grand Rapids neighborhoods. We do things a bit differently at Schmoe's, sort of old school. We make all the styles of beer true to style. That's our focus. So you want to relax and enjoy a well-made craft beer that tastes like a craft beer is supposed to taste, stop into Schmoe's. We're located in Cascade on Patterson Ave, right before the ice rink. Or check us out at schmoes.com. We're open every day but Sunday.
Barbecue Bob for Garrett's Appliance. Lots of folks are remodeling, and if you are, you owe it to yourself to go to Garrett's Appliance. They made my kitchen the perfect example of elegant and functional. Visit either location, 29th Street in Kentwood or 28th Street in Wyoming. Garrett's Appliance also has a super lineup of patio kitchen equipment, and you can count on their design team for a perfect outdoor grilling area. Visit garrettsappliances.com. That's garrettsappliances.com. Now hit me.
The Grilling Guys.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Grilling Guys. Hey, we're talking about budgets on the Barbie. Not the Barbie doll, but the barbecue. And this is a time of year where more and more of the listeners are brushing off their man card and their grill and getting out and making it happen on their deck. And they're being startled a little bit when they go to the store to see that hamburger is $5.99 a pound and, you know, chicken and pork are probably the deals. So, you know, we thought we'd talk a little bit about that today.
Yeah. I have one of my favorite stories is, you know, it's fun when you can teach a good barbecue man something, and it's even more fun when he hears it on your show and then does it for his restaurant. And I'm talking about Pat up at Chase Creek Smokehouse, was listening to a segment we did years ago where I did my first smoked meatloaf and how I was so thrilled with how it turned out. And he immediately, because he's a real foodie. I mean, this guy will try anything. He immediately smoked up a couple meatloaf and put them on the special menu, and he sold out like instantly, and the people loved it.
Right.
So it does work very well. And again, it's a nice way to take some lesser expensive foods and combine them and make something that's got a great presentation, a great story. I don't know anybody that doesn't like meatloaf.
Right. So I got a question for you. When you put a meatloaf on the smoker, is it in a tin? Is it on a flat pan? What did you? How does that go on?
There's several ways you can do it. The first time I did it, I actually did it on a grill and did it offset, and I put it on a pizza stone.
Right.
And I just hand formed it. I got wise after that and did it in a bread loaf and then sprayed it with Pam, and then it released real nice, and then it was perfect. But the cool thing about doing it is, you know, when you do a meatloaf and you sometimes, like, your wife will bake it in a pan or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a ton of fat that's,
yes, there is,
gurgling around it.
Right, swimming in it.
Yeah.
When it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas when you do it in the smoker, it just adds to the savory smoke, you know, that's
right.
Where you get your savory
it
flavor.
It renders, drips off, hits,
yes,
the heat, and you get that savory smoke.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That that was why I was asking, because smoke, when you smoke meat, you get the smoke flavor on the surface, and it penetrates a little bit depending how long it's in the smoker, but something like a meatloaf probably in there a couple hours before it's done.
No. It depends on the temperature you go.
Yeah, right.
I don't go heavy smoke on anything like that. My wife doesn't really like a whole lot of smoke, and
right,
I think a lot of people don't. I just wanted to kind of have some smoke,
right?
So that it pleases more people, right?
But if you had it laying on a pizza stone, where I'm going is you'd have, in essence, three sides of it that it's,
yeah,
exposed to the,
oh,
smoke.
Yeah.
You put it in a tin, you got one side.
Well, I never smoke it in a tin.
Right.
I form it in a bread pan.
Okay.
And then I flip it over onto the rack or a stone.
Right.
It's good to have it on a stone of some sort because it's so soft and pliable that it will actually kind of weld itself to the rack. If,
right,
you're,
yeah,
not careful.
Sink down in and,
it does,
and then it cooks onto the rack. Yeah,
yes.
And it's a pain to get it off there. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I actually make my own breadcrumb and croutons because,
yeah,
we've got a lot of bakers in the family, and it's a great use for bread that is getting a little old. I cube it up and I put it in a big bowl. And I pour Old World Olive Company's EVO or Tuscan, mm-hmm, or both on it. And then I hit it with some Lowry's garlic salt. and I toss it around and roll them around like that, and then I bake them for about 20 minutes at 350, and it makes the best croutons.
And you use croutons in your meatloaf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just crush them up. Because I like keeping bags of them around. My wife loves it when I do that because she'll literally just eat the croutons.
Sure. It's like a snack, man. Yeah. They're that good when they're seasoned with that EVO. And,
but it's a good a use for, salt. You know, again, yeah. You're being frugal. You're using your old bread.
Right.
And I very often will get those two loaves for $5 at Costco. Mm-hmm. Really good bread.
Yeah.
And we can't eat it fast enough, so I'll just start slicing it up, and there you've got your croutons.
Yeah. The speaking of eating it fast enough, the horse is back living in my basement, and boy, can he eat fast. So, well, that's a whole other story.
But.
Well,
your hockey boy?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, at least now you don't have to do your lawn.
Right. No. Why, is he eating it? No, he's not. And I'm still mowing it, so I don't know. But anyway.
So back to the meatloaf part.
Yeah, right.
So I do, I'll put like a couple of eggs, chopped celery, chopped onion real fine, and maybe some green pepper real fine. And I'll mix that in with the egg, and then I'll put the breadcrumbs on there. And then I'll break up my hamburger into small chunks, and then I'll lightly fold all that together. Again, it's ground meat. You don't want to work it too hard.
Right.
Because you're going to make a texture that's not as appealing as a nice tender piece of meatloaf.
Right.
And then, of course, if you have the talent and skills, if you like it, you can, like, I grew up with ketchup on
the top
meatloaf, but yeah. My wife likes gravy, so she'll sometimes whip up some gravy.
How does she like her pasties?
Ketchup.
Ah, yeah, right.
Nobody in my house puts gravy on a pasty.
Oh, but she'll put it on meatloaf.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
My mother actually used to bake her meatloaf with ketchup on it.
Well, mine did too. Yeah, and it came out gooey.
Yeah.
Came out gooey on top.
I think that was a thing.
Well, ketchup was a staple when you were growing up. I mean, it went on everything, right?
And, yes.
So if you don't need a whole loaf, you know,
I've
got that pizza.
Oh, it's a perfect leftover.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is. And it freezes well, too. If you've got, you know, if you got the smoker going, make three of them and you can freeze a couple of them, then just thaw them out and have them.
That's another thought.
Right. But, I like to play with this pizza cooker, and I'm not going to go down a recipe, but meatballs on pizza are really good. Have you made meatballs on the smoker? And
well, that's what I was going to cover next. Funny,
really?
Funny you'd be reading the show plan.
Yeah. Wow. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is a first at the Grilling Guys, so we appreciate that.
Randy actually looked at the show plan. There's no cheap shots on this show. Conrad will vouch for it.
Yeah.
Or we won't pay him. Meatballs on the grill or the smoker, it depends on, you're usually cooking for your wife. Or
well,
yourself.
Yeah, you know.
But exactly. Does your wife like smoked? If she does, do them on the smoker. If you don't have a smoker and you have a grill, you can still set them on the grill, indirect grill them.
Right.
Because what you don't want to have to do is move a meatball too fast.
Right, or too many times.
If you're grilling it, you might disrupt the whole setting of it, and it'll fall apart.
Once again, I would put them on a stone or something because they too will sink into the grate and stick. They kind of cook around the grate, especially if you've got one of those grills. It's got a wire grate rather than maybe wider ones. The thinner ones, the meatballs will settle in. So use some sort of a stone. Bob's not a big tinfoil guy.
Just
I'm
for
not
hats.
Either. But the stone, the benefit of the stone is it will heat up and it'll cook the bottom of it too. So you get the crispiness all the way around.
Oh, yeah.
And that creates your indirect heat.
Yep.
Because the stone's getting hot and then the air is cooking the rest of it.
We should try like a cedar plank sometime.
Cedar plank meatballs?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I guess we could, but I'm not seeing it right now.
Well, and if I'm going to do the meatballs for an Italian dish, I'm going to go to Sobeys and get his sweet, mild Italian sausage and make the meatballs out of that.
Yep. Yep, and you can buy that stuff in a casing. Just take it out of the casing, put it.
Well, he sells in bulk.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, coming up next, we might leave the cow and head over to the hog because pork is a deal, and we've got a couple ideas on ways to prepare that, too. You're listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Ben Valley Vineyards located on the shores of Lake Michigan in Fendale, Michigan, 45 minutes south of Grand Rapids. It's one of the most beautiful, most picturesque vineyards in North America. This family's been making wine for over 40 years. You have to bring your friends and family to the tasting room and experience pure Michigan wine, Fen Valley Vineyards.
With the grilling guys coming at you like a pit bull. We smoke butt, and it's a mitful. Backyard masters, barbecue blasters. Nobody smokes a T-bone faster. So when you see the grilling guy Rick.
Welcome back. You listen to Grilling Guys. The stuff that we talk about between segments is
can't
just
be a, on air.
Right, it can't be on air. But boy, do we have fun with that. But anyway, you know, that's kind of why we do this, as a matter of fact, is this is a side hustle for both of us. And but we appreciate you tuning in because we have a hell of a lot of fun with this thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll pick up a little tips and techniques here. And we're talking about the budget when you walk into the meat market. And, you know, everybody loves the you know, bone-in ribeye, but you might not, your budget might not support $15.99 to $19.99 a pound. And, you know, you got to feed a family. So let's look at another part of the meat counter, and that's the pork, right?
Yeah, pork loin is always the deal.
Now you're
always.
Talking, you're not the little one that's tennis ball size, but you're talking like the softball
yeah,
size.
Yeah, the
right?
Tenderloin is a pretty good deal, too. And they sell those pre-marinated that aren't half bad. But I'm talking about the loin, the center of a pork chop.
Right.
And it's boneless. It's got the fat cap on it. And how do you like to do a loin?
Well, a couple ways. When I do a whole one, I'll smoke it. And when I say a whole one, it usually comes in like a 3-4 pound chunk, right? It's maybe a foot long. And like I said, it's big, about as big rounds as a softball. And that thing will feed 6 or 8 people. So if I've got that group coming over, right, what I might do is get the tech hot and sear it on the outside a little bit just to set my seasonings. And then I'll transfer it either over to indirect or, more likely, put it in the green egg, which sits right beside my tech, and just bring it up to 165 center temperature slowly. Maybe take me 2 or 3 hours to do that because I don't want a real hot fire. I want it to cook slow and because it's a really lean piece of meat.
Yeah, and we're going to have Chef Martin on the next segment, and he is from ThermoWorks, which makes ThermoPen. He's a blogger and a chef. And a really interesting fellow. I chatted with him last night after the class he was putting on. But see, when I do a loin, I never go above 145.
Okay.
You said 165.
Right.
It's so lean that if you bring it beyond 145 every degree, in my opinion, you're driving moisture out. It's fully cooked at 145.
Okay.
And it won't be pink.
Right.
And
that's it, that little center. It's always about the size of a quarter in the center that's pink. And women specifically that eat at my house are like, ooh, that part's wrong.
Now,
I'm like, no,
now if
no,
you're using
it's
a
not.
ThermoPen and you put your probe right in the center and it's right. 145, it's not going to be pink.
Okay.
145 is bueno.
Yeah, cool.
That's money.
Well, and we'll talk to him about that in the next segment. But the other way is, more often than not, I'm not feeding 8 or 10 people. You know, that happens when the family comes over on a weekend or whatever. But then I'll cut it in chops,
mm-hmm.
right? And you've got some ideas with regards to marinade and tenderizing and things that you do with your chops. I know that you cook,
yeah,
cook chops.
Yeah, we've talked about it here a bunch.
Yeah.
But I'll go over it real quickly. Basically, I cut those loin into 1.5-inch chops.
Right.
And it's called a chop instead of a steak because it's loin meat.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll cut it into 1.5 inches. I'll oil it up, and I will take my jacquard or any kind of meat hammer or whatever you have, and I'll beat the snot out of it. And I'll oil it, and then I'll put salt and pepper on it, throw it on the grill, and grill it up again. 145 is the magic number for loin, for any pork, but loin in particular. And it just, when you're done grilling it, it looks like a chop again. It magically just like pulls itself together.
Right. Heat does that to meat. I mean, when you've hammered it, what you've done is you've spread it out and you've broken down the connective tissue
yep.
and the muscle. And then as you cook it, it it shrinks back up to what it was.
Yeah, artificially reassembles itself.
Right, yeah. But what that has done is you've driven moisture into this lean piece of meat, and it cooks a little quicker.
And if you don't have one, look, find somebody who sells Jacquard. You can probably buy them on eBay. It's a bed of nails, and you just pound your meat with it. And it really does a nice job at cutting up that connective tissue without destroying the meat. But it also drives in the seasonings, if you've seasoned it, drives in the oil. Because, again, very lean piece of meat on the inside.
Right.
And the more oil you can get to that, the better, you know. I remember the first time I did it, it was after getting done with the brisket class, and we used to always teach that you Jacquard the heck out of a brisket. And I thought, I wonder if that would work on a pork loin. And I tried it, and I was blown. I was so proud of myself.
Yeah.
I was so blown away, though. I was cutting a pork chop with a fork.
Right.
And that has never happened in my life.
Right.
We all grew up with mom overcooking pork and,
yeah,
you know, getting the hockey puck thing. And
yep,
it would shoot off the plate when you tried to cut it.
Yeah. Yep.
This was
exactly,
this was like a beautiful, and again, you're talking $3 a pound, maybe.
Yep.
If it's not on sale.
Yeah.
And that's a reasonable price for a piece of protein.
Right. And a pound will feed a couple adults easy, you know. So now you're looking the center of the plates, $1.50, $2.
Yeah.
A person, that
is
in
reasonable.
Today's age is reasonable.
It's reasonable.
Right. Yeah. Rather than that.
So another piece of meat that I probably accidentally discovered the beauty of was a pork steak. In my house growing up, we were what I would call poor folks. You know, blue collar workers had to be very careful with the budget. We didn't have steak till like I was the last one in the house.
Right.
And then right, my dad would buy a cow.
Right.
And we'd have steak like every night.
Yeah.
But when there were six of us at the house, you know, it wasn't that way. So my mom would make pork steak. And the way she did it was she would, I don't even remember, to be honest with you. It seems like it ended up in the oven ultimately in a sauce, and it was very tender and beautiful. But if you try and do a pork steak on the grill, for example, you're going to find that it might be the kind of outcome you want, or it might be a little tough.
This is a cut with a bone in it,
yeah,
generally. Or is it like round steak off the rump, or
it's really kind of the end of the pork chop where it gets into a bunch of other darker colored meat. So
right,
you'll have a little piece of that loin, and then I don't know what Tim Sobey could tell you. But so what I did in one of these classes was I practiced before I did it, but I put one of our seasonings on it, and I smoked these pork steak, and I brought them up to 165. Because, again, it's very fatty,
right,
and darker red meat. And I remember Rob Russell and I sitting around eating one of those and looking at each other. It's like, where have you been my whole life, you beautiful
right,
piece of meat?
Right.
It was so good. I cut it with a fork. And it's cheap. It's cheaper than loin.
Right.
Pork yep, steak is what they hide under the chops at big box stores.
Right, yeah. Wow, look, there's this pan of, or this package of pork chops, right? And then you get home with it, and there's four pork chops on top and a big chunk of pork steak underneath
yeah,
it, right? Yeah. Surprise! You know.
But if you smoke it, and moderate smoke, decent temperature, and bring it up to 165, I'm telling you, it's a totally different
so the
animal.
Loin is 145, the chops are 165,
yep,
yeah. So in,
no,
in,
the steak.
Yeah, the steak, excuse me, is 165. So here's the number one problem that people have, and this is a little bit of a segue into the next segment, but
temperature.
It's temperature. Every time when somebody this show started over meat temperatures, and what I mean by that is Bob and I, I'm going back for 15 years, we were cooking at our church, and they were doing that men's night, and we went to that thing and a few times, and it's like, man, this food is just not good. And wasn't anybody's...
They grilled the heck out of the steaks.
Right. It wasn't anybody's fault. It was lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
So Bob and I had the opportunity...
Well, and having to feed a couple hundred guys.
Right,
too.
But you and I had the opportunity to step in, and it immediately changed because we weren't overcooking things. And then other people watched, and our old partner Greg Mosheri noticed, and here we are on the Grilling Guys. Some 14, 15 years later, we're doing this still. But it was all about temperature. Stuff is... The number one problem is things are overcooked. So how do you guard against that? you get yourself a really good digital thermometer. So in a digital thermometer, there's a lot of them out there, a lot of different kinds. They all work, but the one that we've settled on as the best is one that's called ThermoPen, and it comes from a company called ThermoWorks.
Right? And they're made in America.
Right. They're made in Utah, out in Utah. So coming up next, they have, as you might expect, a chef that works for them, and his name is Martin Earl. We've had him on the show. It's been a while. But anyway, he's going to be on the show. We're going to dial him up. You're going to want to listen to this because this guy is a wealth of knowledge. You're listening to Grilling Guys. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Hey, this is Jeff from the Grilling Guys, and I want to talk to you about my favorite butcher shop. It's Sobey Meats on the northwest side of Grand Rapids on Remembrance Road. This is a custom butcher. They'll cut any piece of meat that you want, any size, any way that you can dream of to make sure that your grilling experience is perfect. Sobey Meats smokes all their own meats. They've got kielbasas and over 40 different flavors of brats. You've got to try Sobey Meats on Remembrance Road. Tell them the Grilling Guys sent you.
Hi, this is Shasta with Old World Olive Company. I want to personally invite you to visit one of our tasting rooms and sample any one of our certified extra virgin olive oils or aged balsamic vinegars. My knowledgeable staff can show you hundreds of pairing combinations. We also offer seasonings, tapenades, and specialty wines to complete your meal. So please, step into my kitchen and make a lasting memory of your own. Or you can visit us at theoldworldoliveco.com.
And now, back to the Grillin' Guys Show.
With the Grillin' Guys coming at you like a pit bull. We smoke butt, and it's a mittful. Shooting sauce on ribs is what men do. We like meat and no tofu.
Welcome back. You are listening to Grillin' Guys on the Grillin' Guys Talk Network. Hey, we're going to reach out to Utah, Bob, and talk to a grilling and chef expert.
Yeah, and we're going to find out if that coyote ever got that Roadrunner.
Yeah, all right.
Martin, how are you, buddy?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We have Chef Martin Earl from, oh gosh, all kinds of things. But I know you're a blogger and you have a nice gig with ThermoPen, ThermoWorks, and you do all kinds of things. So what we're doing is trying to help people get some affordable things on the grill for Mother's Day.
Sounds great. So affordable things on the grill. You know, the first thing that comes to mind when you say that is actually boneless, skinless chicken thighs. You know, chicken breast is more expensive. Obviously, everything that's beef costs a fortune these days. But chicken thighs cost practically nothing for a pound of meat. And you can marinate those any way you want. I was thinking of doing either like a yogurt with some curry powder mixed into it, you know, and some salt, and make kind of like a tandoori chicken sort of
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it's really tasty. Then just do them whole and then grill them and then take them off the grill and chop them up and throw them like in some flatbread with some yogurt sauce and stuff like that. It's a great kind of thing to eat right when you're going here from spring into summer and the weather's warming up. It's a really like warm and fresh kind of thing. Of course, with chicken thighs, you want to make sure that you're cooking them at the right temperature. You know, chicken breast, you want to cook as low as you can and still be safe. Chicken thighs, you want to cook a lot higher because that connective tissue that's in there, it needs to break down more. So you want to cook those to at least 175 degrees, but all the way up to almost 200 degrees is okay with chicken thigh and still going to be juicy and tender, which is also makes it way better than chicken breast.
Martin, quick question on prepping that chicken thigh. Before you cook it, a lot of times when they come out of the package, the skinless, boneless ones, there's a layer of fat on one side of that. Are you taking that off before you cook them?
You know, I don't take that off. I find, especially when we're going over direct high heat on the grill, that just kind of turns into crispy, delicious goodness.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of renders out really well. I would take that off if I was doing a low, slow smoker cook. It gets kind of jelly-y, and that's not everybody's favorite thing.
Yeah.
But on the grill, and this is the Grilling Guys podcast, then I'm going to go high heat on that. I'm just going to let that go. And, you know, it'll drip fat into the flames, and that'll cause some flare-ups. And we don't want that. We don't want it to taste like ash, you know. But getting that fatty fire up on the meat doesn't taste bad at all.
Right.
Of course, you do want to make sure the one thing that I do trim off is, like, depending on where you're getting your chicken thighs from, there's almost always like some little pieces of bone still attached
Right.
One of them in the package. So always check that.
You do want to feel them out pretty.
A sliver of
bone. You want to feel those thighs out pretty good.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely,
as usual.
Yeah.
Yep. Something a grilling guy knows how to do, right, Bob?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But I think like that's a great way to have an economical cut that's really tasty. And you can dress it up any way you want. You like do some lemon and olive oil and oregano and do Greek thighs. You can throw them into like an adobo sort of thing, either a Filipino adobo. Let it marinate in some soy sauce and vinegar with some onion and some bay leaf. That's freaking amazing.
So go over, do the Filipino adobo. I want to hear that.
Okay. Filipino adobo is basically soy sauce and vinegar. You put some sugar in there too. And then bay leaf and onion. And you can put some jalapenos in there. That's controversial. And you just let that sit in that overnight. And then you just grill it. And it doesn't make any sense to me that it is as good as it is. Because when you say it's just onion and some black pepper, onion and soy sauce and bay leaf and vinegar, I'm like, that doesn't sound super appealing. But it comes out so beautiful.
Has a synergy.
The way that the soy sauce colors the meat like that. And it just comes out so rich and flavorful. And you can baste it with some of the sauce, some of the extra sauce, while it's cooking. It comes out like lacquered pieces of chicken that are just unbelievably good.
So no oil in that marinade?
No oil in that marinade, no. Hmm. The salt is what's doing all the work for us. The salt in the soy sauce is what's doing the work. It's tenderizing the proteins and things like that for us overnight. The chicken thighs are actually fatty enough that we're going to get enough oil on the surface of this while it's cooking.
So you could do a bone-in thigh with that as well.
Absolutely, uh-huh. And I think that as far as adobo goes, that would be a more traditional thing to do. And I've done that, and it's fantastic. You do the thighs and the drumsticks. If you buy some chicken quarters, cut them up into thighs and drumsticks, marinate them in the adobo, and then you'll get that little bit of crispy skin on there, which is never a bad thing. And that's a really delicious thing to have.
I love it. Yeah, adobo is underappreciated in a lot of areas.
It is, yeah.
So when you're doing the drumsticks, have you ever, like, taken your boning knife and trimmed them up and pulled them up like a pulling off a turtleneck sweater, so you pull it up over the top of it?
I've trimmed them up, so we call them like meat lollipops. And
right.
You cut the tendons by the thin end and just kind of squish all the meat up to the other end.
Right.
Yeah, I've done that. That's kind of a fun thing to do. And like then you have kind of a sphere of meat, which does cook fairly evenly, which is nice. I think that's a fun presentation.
Yeah.
And you like hold it up by the little knuckle and like, you know, chaw and like your King Henry or something like that.
It's, yeah.
That's a fun time.
Yeah. You got to be royalty to eat at Bob's Grill, right?
Right.
Martin, do you grill those or smoke those after you bring that meat up to the end?
I have smoked them in the past. I've never tried grilling them. I'd be maybe a little bit concerned about, well, no, it's dark meat, so I wouldn't be that concerned because it's really, really hard to overcook dark meat. So even on the high heat, I might just do like a slightly lower, not raging inferno, direct heat. I want a little bit more space between me and the coals.
So
I wouldn't attempt to grill on them, but I have smoked them in the past.
So you're actually just sliding it all up. You're not turning it inside out.
I've never turned it inside out for this. I did that back in cooking school. That was a little different. I made like a stuffed chicken thing, kind of like that. But I haven't taken it upside down off of the meat yet. No, that sounds really interesting. I'm intrigued by that.
Did you bone when you stuffed them? Did you bone the drumsticks?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a cool. We haven't talked about that in a few years, but that is also a nice thing.
I don't want to derail it, but what I did was actually I pulled the skin off. I pulled the skin off in one piece, and then I took the meat off the bone, chopped it, seasoned it, stuffed it into the skin, closed the skin up, and then cooked that until it crisped.
Ooh, nice.
And
wow.
So you had like a little packet of crispy skin that had no bone in it. So it's kind of like a boneless drumstick that was skin on.
Wow, cool. Never done that before.
Sounds good. It's a little bit more effort, you know, than maybe for every day. But it is a fun thing to try and do.
And that would be a really good time to do the adobo marinade because I can taste that right now.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. That'd be fantastic with the adobo marinade, especially if you like put a little bit in the pouch with it, you know, marinate the meat and then stuff it into the skin. I would be very excited to eat that. And obviously, with all chicken, we're worried about foodborne illness. You've got to use your thermopen to make sure that you're getting up to that temperature right for safety. But also, as we said, for the dark meat, you want it over 175 so that it isn't all chewy and rubbery and things like that. So you want to make sure that you've got your grill at the right temperature, but then that you're also taking the temperature of your food. That's how you're going to get the best quality out of it, no matter what it is that you're cooking.
So you get to play with all the ThermoPen, ThermoWorks, new products. What's the cool new thing that you like?
You know, we introduced the Smoke X a couple of years ago, and I just, like, I don't even want to use any other leave-in probe thermometers anymore. It's my favorite one. I'm not a big Wi-Fi connectivity guy, so I don't need the signals very often. But the Smoke X has the long-range thermometer on it, and I love that. Also, we released a 2.5-inch needle probe for grilling. And it's almost the only probe that I use now also because, you know, it doesn't flop over. It doesn't have a lot of extra stuff to it. Unless I'm cooking something like a whole pork tenderloin, I don't need the longer probe. Just that little short probe slides between two rib bones. So the Smoke X with the needle probe on it is kind of my favorite combo.
Perfect.
Right now.
Well, Martin, I promise we're not going to wait so long to get you back next time. It's just always great to hear your brilliance. Thanks so much for joining us. It's how do people find you?
Go to blog.thermoworks.com, and that's where I'm writing about ThermoWorks things. And on Instagram, I'm at Chef Martin Earl.
Thank you so much.
All right, that was Chef Martin Earl from ThermoWorks. You listen to Grilling Guys. Stick with us. We'll be back.